and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm John Schieber.
And you may notice we have a new voice on the podcast this week. That is because, as we mentioned, we were sad to see the departure of our colleague Daryl Etherington. And because we do everything on the Original Content Podcast, a little seat of the pants, a little loose, I think Jordan and I, what we wanted to do was to have other people on the show, but not necessarily to have, you know, a permanent third host, but just kind of like rotate. And like, I think a lot of different TechCrunch folks and maybe even potentially non-TechCrunch folks have, you know, opinions about Netflix and Hulu and things. So we're going to try that out and hopefully get a lot of different voices on the show.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really good. We've got John today, and we'll rotate through some people. Probably you probably get more regular appearances by a handful of people as time goes on. But for now, we're excited to diversify. We hope you guys are excited too. And just a quick shout out to Daryl, who is no longer with us. He is going to be so frustrated by John Schieber's audio. I can't wait to get a text message from him or something. So that's going to be exciting. Get a little chit chat going with Daryl, but we are excited to have you, John. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling great. It's sunny and mild in Los Angeles, and a beautiful day outside that I can see from the hovel in which I reside while I write my TechCrunch stories. And looking forward to chatting about the entertainment news of the week.
It is Friday.
Our first original content host who's actually recording from LA, from Hollywood, from like the place where so much of this stuff originates.
Well, from Koreatown,
huge difference.
But close enough.
John really embeds himself in Hollywood. You can just feel it.
He's a real Hollywood guy.
Yeah, no question. You can just feel it. He definitely doesn't sit in his apartment and write tech stories all day. He's out there talking to agents, talking to stars.
I'm mixing it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's our first piece of news, Anthony?
So for people who don't know, the way we do the show is we have a couple pieces of streaming and entertainment news that we recap quickly and, you know, weigh in. And then a lot of the episode will be reviewing a new streaming show. This week, we're going to review Queer Eye on Netflix. But as Jordan mentioned, we're starting with the news. So the first piece of news I think we should discuss is the acquisition of MoviePhone. Have you been to MoviePhone recently, used MoviePhone? It is, until recently, our corporate, you know, cousin, because it was also owned by Oath.
Yeah, my whole understanding and memory of MoviePhone is being like 11 years old and my mom being like, do you want to go to the movies? Like, call MoviePhone.
Right.
It's the same thing,
right? I think
they
actually shut that down, the phone part of MoviePhone a couple years ago, and it was acquired by the same company that now owns MoviePass. Which I think, you know, no offense to MoviePhone, is actually the more interesting company of the two. And it's basically the, you know, for those of you who don't know, MoviePass is basically this thing where you pay $10 and you get, you get a free movie ticket every day, which seems insane and unsustainable to me. apparently they think they can make it work. MoviePhone
awesome.
Is part of that empire.
I actually am a MoviePass subscriber, but I don't think I have ever used my card to go see a movie. So there you go. They're getting $10
for
me.
Why? You're subsidizing a bunch of other users, essentially.
I am subsidizing a bunch of users. And, you know, I'm just too busy writing the tech stories and mixing it up with the Hollywood agents and glitterati out here to actually go see a movie.
Didn't MoviePass have problems? Didn't they like get into trouble recently?
There were some issues, I think, with ticketing from some of the services that they were involved they had partnered with, but I don't know where that stands right now. I think they've cleared that up, but I don't know. I'm not sure. Anthony, you might know more.
Well, the other issue was that basically the CEO went on stage at a conference and he said, hey, you know, the real MoviePass business model is the data that we're going to have about, and, you know, this marketing channel that we're going to have to these users. And in fact, we have all this data about your location that's not just, you know, movie ticketing. And so people kind of freaked out about that. And then the CEO had to apologize by not just saying, like, we feel bad about saying these things about your privacy. But he was like, also, we don't have any of the capabilities I said. I was just getting ahead of myself. So it was very strange.
Wow. What a nincompoop. But, like, okay, so my thing. I mean, Anthony, you love, you're a big movie buff. You love movies.
This is true.
I like movies, but I don't necessarily like love going to the movies. I feel like a lot changed when I moved to New York, though. Like going to the movies is far less fun in New York, I feel like, than it was in like Texas suburbs, you know?
Just because there's more to do in New York?
There's more to do in New York. I feel like it will also, like, me moving to New York also marked me like essentially paying for my own movies, right? So like, and shit got more expensive, obviously. But then also, like, I don't know, you walk there and you walk back, and it's like in the winter and stuff. Like in the winter is a great time to go to the movies and other places, because you like drive up and you just like cozy, and then you drive back home. Like getting out of an 11 o'clock movie in February in New York is like, ugh. You know, it's like,
yeah, but going to the movies in the summer in New York, where we grew up in the South, because Jordan, you're from Texas and I'm from Louisiana. We used to just go to the movies as a way to stay cool
off. Yeah, yeah, totally.
So, and that was pretty amazing, and it still is pretty amazing. I mean,
I'm not saying I don't like going to the movies. I'm just saying, like, I think collectively, people going to the movies has slowed down a little bit. Is that a fair thing to say? Like, people don't go to the movies as much as they used to.
Well, the
because there's just so much content out there for you to watch if you really wanted to watch something. And technically, I mean, I don't do this. I have a pretty strong stance on like piracy and stuff. But you know, you could get your hands on whatever movie you want at any time on the internet. You know, so. I don't know.
And I think that's part of the argument that MoviePass is trying to make, is to say, look, the way people think about going to the movies is really different. And certainly, you know, when the latest Star Wars or Marvel movie comes out, people will go out and see that, and they're willing to pay. You know, part of it is the ticket prices have just gone up really significantly. And so, especially if you're not just buying your ticket, but, you know, your significant other's ticket, children's tickets, like that, you know, can get pretty expensive pretty quickly. So, you know, MoviePass is trying to say, well, like on all these other kinds of movie, I think, well, they also do it for big movies, but particularly on a lot of movies that aren't necessarily the giant blockbusters, it's going to be tough. It's going to get harder and harder to convince people to go to theaters. So I think that is the one part of the model that I think it is interesting to say, let's rethink how we bring people to theaters.
And just getting back to my original point about the difference between New York movie theaters and other movie theaters, this became apparent to me over Christmas. So when I went home to Dallas over Christmas, we went to the movies 4 times because my family loves going to the movies, especially over holidays. I think it's the best way to stop a fight in its tracks. It's like, everybody go to the movies, stop talking. And we would go to the movies and you'd choose your seat, and then there are these like recliners, and you could have like wings and like a burger and like all of this like delicious food. And it was like a luxury experience. And there aren't any movie theaters in New York that are like investing in all of that new stuff. It's like, you better get there 45 minutes early.
What about, y'all have Arclight, right? Or Alamo Drafthouse? That's out there.
We don't have Arclight. We have Alamo Drafthouse. We have the Nighthawk.
Yeah. And like, you could go to the Nighthawk or whatever. Sure. But like, I'm just talking about a regular AMC theater. You know what I mean? Like, a regular AMC theater has like a full on concessions that's like delicious. They have, you know, reclining seats and reserve your seat and all of this stuff. And it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think one of the things you're getting at is that in New York, there's like a wide, just this enormous like breadth of like quality in movie theaters. And you, if especially if you don't go regularly, it's hard to know, you know, what where to go, because there are like these like art house theaters that have amazing classic films, but like some of the worst seating that you ever see, like in a theater, that's like insanely.
It's like
bad.
Completely flat. It's like sitting at a banquet hall and trying to watch a movie at eye level.
Right.
And you're like,
right.
What?
And then like, I'm, as a short guy, I'm always moving my head, trying to like, you know, look over the person in front of me. It's,
I just
it's always
bring
ridiculous.
A phone book.
Isn't that part of, isn't that part of the joy though? I mean, the reason why you go to Film Forum is because it's an old crappy movie theater that hasn't changed since 1950. and you're sitting there watching a movie that probably ran originally in 1950 at Film Forum. And
I mean, but even
I think
then,
that's true, like, for some people, but that's hard to build a, you know, a long lasting business around that.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, I can't wait to go sit in that seat behind the guy in the baseball hat. You know, like nobody nobody thinks that. Like, even the theater, I go to Williamsburg Cinemas more than anywhere else. And like, that's a pretty okay theater. It's not bad, but it's like really small. And on a Friday night, like when big movies are coming out, like you can't even walk through the lobby. There are like hundreds of people just in the lobby trying to get their stuff sorted out.
And yeah, and they just like, have no line space. They like everything else I think about Williamsburg Cinemas is pretty good.
They have good stadium seating and
they never plan for like having these giant lines, so it just like, takes up the whole theater.
Can I just say that these are tremendously first world problems? This is like we're now discussing this is also perhaps the most coastal conversation I've ever been a party to.
I brought up Dallas 3 or 4 times, okay?
You did.
Also, this is a podcast about entertainment, okay? First world problems is our bread and butter.
The suburbs are better. For movies, for the movie experience is what I'm hearing from y'all. And I don't know that I necessarily disagree. Although Baton Rouge, the movie theaters in Baton Rouge need to step up their game. They have not really arrived at the same level as Dallas theaters, apparently. So
Louisiana also has a coast, by the way. anyways, Movie Phone and Movie Pass. Do we think that Movie Phone brings tangible value to MoviePass, or like, I mean, clearly has to bring something to the table because they paid for it. But I'm just curious about the. You'd think we'd know more about our corporate overlords and their decision making, but we don't. So,
well, I mean, the decision to sell it was certainly wise. It wasn't doing anything at Oath, so yeah. So you know, there you go. But I mean, I guess the play is to have now a channel where they can do movie reviews and show trailers and own that platform online and in an app themselves through MoviePass. And I can sort of see how that makes sense. You can do some push notifications, I guess, around marketing and other types of promotional promotions on a broader platform, but I mean,
especially, you know, once you've collected all that user data
that they bought from Facebook. No, I'm kidding, they didn't buy it from Facebook.
No fake news on the podcast.
but yeah, I mean, look, if you've got something that's already pretty fallow in its existing platform, right? So there was nothing going on, as far as I know, with Movie Phone at Oath. So just to dump it and get rid of it and give it to somebody who might be able to re-energize it is seems like not a bad play on either part. It wasn't really doing anything for the Yahoo combined entity, right?
Right. Well, I think the other aspect of it is now that the vast majority of the deal was for stock. And so now Oath is, you know, owns a significant amount of MoviePass stock. So, you know, I was discussing this with someone last night, and they suggested, oh, well, maybe this is just like in a couple of years, we're just going to buy MoviePass. And we should emphasize that no one would tell us this within the company if this were true. So this is pure speculation. But like, this is just a way for Oath to get more involved in the MoviePass business.
Also not a bad play. Wow, look at Oath making some decisions, doing some things.
Oh, team. All right, what's our next piece of news? I'm kind of bored with that.
Yeah,
no, that's
fair.
All right, so the other thing we wanted to talk about was Stranger Things. So it was created by these guys, Matt and Ross Duffer. They're known as the Duffer Brothers. And they have been sued by this producer, Charlie Kessler, who made this short film called Montauk. And he's, you know, Charlie is basically claiming that that Stranger Things is a ripoff of Montauk, which, I mean, at first you think it's sort of silly, because, you know, Stranger Things is itself just a ripoff of so many different things that are, like, mashed together. So, you know, why would this one thing be, you know, the main source? But one apparent sort of fact that he points out in the suit is the idea that the original version of Stranger Things, that Stranger Things was in a previous form known as the Montauk Project, and I think was based around similar sorts of rumors around some sort of like government experiment. And so, you know, that there is at least some sort of tangential connection between the two.
Interesting. I'm one of the like 11 people in the United States who didn't fall hard for the Stranger Things thing, and I just haven't even seen it or anything. So, okay, there's a lawsuit about it.
Yeah, and I think one thing to note about like these laws, you know, is anytime there's something successful, there's almost always a lawsuit of somebody saying that they, you know, I think especially in Hollywood, because there are just so many projects to get pitched in some way.
Right.
And a lot of the development process, I think, is not transparent. It ends up being a situation where a lot of people can say, well, I pitched this thing to this studio 10 years ago, and then, or even I just wrote this book 10 years ago, and then this thing that feels very similar to it is now being made, so therefore I assume that, you know, there must be a direct connection. I think most of the time it turns out that's not the case. You don't necessarily want to dismiss any of this stuff out of hand, because certainly there are, you know, shitty plagiarizing studio executives, but I think a lot of the times they kind of don't really go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing we see happen in Silicon Valley too, right? Like anything successful normally is followed by some sort of lawsuit.
Right. Well, and there are a lot of cooks, right, on anything, and ideas come from all over the place. So sometimes these things have merit, sometimes they don't. I wonder if you're going to start seeing more and more of this, given the proliferation of platforms and big money that's flowing in from Silicon Valley to these different production companies, right? So everyone is really hungry for content, and I wonder if this is not just a full employment act for writers and actors, but also for intellectual property lawyers who are going to be suing people around this stuff.
Right. I guess there's just more stuff to sue over, so maybe.
Thanks, Silicon content. Valley. Yeah.
Content.
Speaking of content... is now a good time? I don't know that I have much more to add on that. There is a lawsuit.
No, I think you guys are right. There's like, we sort of wanted to point it out, but I don't think there's really that much.
We know nothing about it, truly.
No, nothing. Maybe now's a good time to get into the meat of the podcast and talk about Queer Eye.
Yes, Queer Eye. Let's do it. And let's talk. I mean, I'm curious. I will say that I had never seen, you know, the original version of Queer Eye. So Netflix's revival of the show is my first exposure to it. What about you?
Yeah, context-wise, like, let's contextualize. So Queer Eye for the Straight Guy is what it used to be called back in the day. Came out in, like, the late 90s, right, Schieber? Or, like, aughts?
As the old man on the podcast, yes, I can confirm that it was a late 90s, early aughts show.
Yeah.
I think I looked this up. I'm going to look it up again, but I'm pretty sure it was early aughts when it first premiered. Or at least the American version was started in 2003.
Really?
I don't know if there was...
Trying to Google it is, like, really difficult because Queer Eye has dominated everything, the new one. But either way, back in the day, it was five guys who would come in and help what was then just a straight dude kind of get his life together. Like, they would fix his hair and change his wardrobe and, like, clean up his house and show him some things about, you know, self-care and grooming, etc. And it was funny, and it, you know, people liked it back in the day. It's almost like, it's kind of like when you watch, I don't know, like, Friends or Will and Grace now, you're like, wow, that's actually really politically incorrect. But back in the day, it was, like, fun, and we didn't know any better, I guess. And so the new Queer Eye is a remake from Netflix, and it does the same thing, but it's not Queer Eye for the Straight Guy anymore. It's really Queer Eye for the guy who wants it and who wants to kind of make a better effort and live to his fullest potential. And they're really clear. And I think it's like the first episode, actually, one of the Fab Five says, you know, the first Queer Eye was all about tolerance. It was all about this culture of like young, you know, straight guys or old straight guys, like just dealing with the fact that gay people were a thing and that maybe they could help with, you know, self-presentation. And then now it's really more about acceptance. And the tone of the show has really changed in a lot of ways to reflect that. Like, it's less about the transformation in a lot of cases than it is about how these five guys will come in and kind of touch the life of someone and make them see something that they hadn't seen before, or like get a perspective that they didn't have before, or just give them the confidence to do what they always thought they could do but never really tried to do. And it will make you laugh and cry in every single episode. Like, I laughed and I cried in every single episode. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Sorry, I talked for a while. What do you guys
think? No, it's totally fine. I mean, I don't disagree with anything that you said. I think that one thing that might get lost is just how radical a notion the first show was when it aired. I mean, this was, it was one of the things that I think brought the gay community into people's living rooms in the same way that Will and Grace did, in a way that hadn't happened before, right? And in an effort to sort of just present these people as people, potentially somewhat caricatured people, but people who you know, could you know, positively impact the lives of these sort of straight guys who needed to get their shit together. But the evolution of the show, and Jordan, you can yell at me if you think I'm wrong about this, but the evolution of the show into something that I think engages a little bit more deeply, and also is pretty expressly political in some of its episodes about the things that it talks about, including, you know, policing in America and sexuality. It's really good, and much more deeply engaged, I think, than the first show was.
Yeah, I think like it really has moved to something that is really about like what, because it's worth noting that the whole series takes place in Georgia. So we're talking about men from the South, and I'm not saying that Georgia is necessarily like, you know, backwardsville, but like, you know, these are Southern men. Some of them are older, you know, up there in their late 50s, 60s, and have grown up in a time where this just wasn't something that they ever expected to really do. And, you know, it to see someone like that, like as I'm gay, and to talk with older people who don't really have an understanding of anything, you know, it wasn't in their vocabulary when they were younger. And to speak to them and see kind of them understand things and have love, no matter, you know, what they heard before when they were young or anything like that, is a really beautiful thing. And I think this show kind of encapsulates that, and it lets people experience it who haven't themselves. Like, you know, my parents they did not really think about me ever being gay, and they weren't really around that very much growing up. And they're religious, you know, and they love me, and they, you know, have been so accepting, and they've been interested to learn, you know, and I think that unless you've experienced it, and most people have at this point, right? Because there are plenty of out gay people out there, but unless you've experienced it, you don't really, this show kind of gives you that feeling of like, you can kind of teach an old dog new tricks, and like they will kind of come around and at least see your perspective, whether or not they agree. And that's a really special thing. That's something that we need as a country on a bunch of different fronts, not necessarily just with like, you know, equal rights, but on a bunch of different fronts, we need to be able to talk, have conversations, and see each other's point of view and learn something from it. If at all, just learn acceptance. And I think the show does a really good job of that. It is much deeper than it was, you know, in 2003 or whatever.
Yeah. Anthony, what was your take?
Oh yeah, no, I think it's great, and I think to Jordan's point, you know, that we think that, to me at least, my preconception of it was that, in as much as it would be about, you know, these sort of broader this broader idea of like tolerance and now acceptance, it would be about taking, you know, queer and gay culture and exposing it to people in the South and making them, you know, sort of changing their preconceptions. That's certainly a big part of what the show is, but I think it's also about, you know, explicitly with the gay, you know, the Fab Five, but then implicitly also the viewer, for a lot of the viewers, I'm going to assume it's about changing preconceptions about people in the South and in Georgia. And like this idea that when you see people, you know, multiple characters who describe themselves as rednecks, and in some ways seem like this caricature of a Southern guy. And then through the course of an episode, you really see them engage emotionally and in some cases politically with these characters. Like, it also changed, and for at least for me personally, like I think when I saw, you know, some of these characters, I thought I had this, you know, very broad, almost cartoonish idea of who they were. And through this episode, they, you know, it would show that I was, you know, not completely wrong. It's not to say they were, you know, not in some ways, obviously, Southern rednecks, as again, they say, but that they also had this, you know, the same emotional complexity of any human being.
That said, though, I think that there are a couple things that could potentially be improved upon. I think, you know, five cisgender gay guys is not necessarily a real representation of queerness in 2018. I think there's a lot of...
Right, it's a narrow representation.
It really is.
One kind of queerness.
And even at that, it's a pretty narrow representation of cisgender gay guys. I mean, and that's no shade thrown at the Fab Five. I think they're all really great and adorable and fun. And the way that they connect with these people and change their lives, I think, is a fabulous thing. I really love watching it. But I think there's a couple things, like, you know, there's an episode where one of the Fab Five, who's black, Karamo, gets pulled over by a police officer, and it's part of the show. It ends up being, you know, one of the police officers is the client or whatever. And there's, you know, while they could have gotten an inclusivity points, I guess, for casting him, and maybe they're trying to open up a dialogue that actually ended up being very impactful, I think, when it happened, a dialogue between a white police officer and a black man. You know, there's a larger conversation, I think, to be had around that. And hopefully it didn't feel glazed over, you know, a little bit, or like wrapped neatly in a bow. You know, there's a couple things that I feel like could be improved upon. That's not to say the show's not great. And it's not to say that it didn't make a good effort. But I think, you know, there's always something to nitpick at. And I think, you know, that's my nitpick, I guess.
Did y'all have a favorite episode?
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, I do think that particularly the episode, which is the third episode, Dega Don't, about, which opens with this, you know, this the Fab Five getting pulled over, and throughout the episode sort of touches on, you know, the sort of a lot of these issues around police treatment of African-Americans and of black people, and I think... I think it was, you know, to Jordan's point, I do think it felt in some ways a little bit glazed over, and the conversation that they show is not a particularly deep,
productive,
or searching
one.
Conversation.
Yeah.
But it clearly meant an incredible amount to both of them, just to like have, just to basically say, hey, we're here, and this is my, like a white police officer and you know, this black queer man, and to like have them both just say like, this is my point of view, and to have the other person acknowledge it clearly was like, had this tremendous weight. And so it meant a lot, even if I don't necessarily think a lot of people are gonna like watch that and be like, oh, like this is like a huge breakthrough, but just to have that conversation, and especially in the context of this kind of show, did feel like it was really meaningful.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think on a personal level for both of them, it meant a lot, and it was a very productive conversation personally. For the national discourse, not so much. But that's still valuable, to watch two people acknowledge each other like that. And to sit, you know, to have that conversation, I thought was really powerful. It's, you know, it doesn't doesn't help the problem necessarily on a grand scale. Maybe it does. I don't know. But I think the thing is, like, I want them to bring to light things and not make light of things. And that's where I think they're going to walk a line with a few things as the show goes on. I think it has been greenlit for a season two, right, Anthony?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To John's question, my favorite episode. I would say my favorite episode was the first one. I forget what his name is. Tom?
Yeah.
Right? Tom. And he's trying to get his ex-wife back. That was one of my favorites. He was talking about redneck margaritas, tequila, Mountain Dew, which sounds right up your alley, John. And then my second favorite episode, or maybe my first favorite episode, I don't know, it's a tie, is the one with the gay guy, who's trying to come out to his family. I forget his name. But he's trying to, he wants to come out to his stepmom,
and they, yeah, that was like the fifth help episode, him through right? that.
Yeah, and those are, I think, my two favorites. And of the Fab Five, Jonathan is obviously my favorite.
Well, that's interesting because I think Jonathan, it took me a little while to come around to because he was the most sort of, you know, kind of like performatively gay in this way, you know, way of being sort of, you know, like, yes, girlfriend kind of stuff. And I wasn't necessarily sure, like, if that was where I wanted the show to go, but, like, he actually has definitely become, I mean, I think all of the Fab Five are terrific. I mean, that seems kind of like a cop out, but I genuinely think all of them are really good. I think Anthony sometimes feels Anthony. A little tangential because the food stuff kind of can feel a little tangential to the yeah,
and he's
other
always
sort
like,
of...
I'm going to show you how to make the most delicious hot dog that you've ever made. You know, and it's just like Anthony's also from New York. I think the rest of them are all from Georgia. I might be wrong about that.
I think, well, Tan is from, isn't he British?
Well, yeah. I think they actually live, you know, it could be misinformation. Let's just scratch that from the record. okay. Something my girlfriend told me, and you can never really trust her news. But the reason I like Jonathan so much, and I had that same vibe, Anthony, that exact same vibe when it first started. I was like, oh, he's going to be like so over the top, you know, like. But
right, like a stereotype of what a gay person
exactly.
is.
Exactly. But what makes him awesome is, one, his performance is fantastic. It's hilarious and so fun. And two, he doesn't change that throughout the whole show, no matter who he's with. And because he's so kind of confident in it, I feel like people instantly warm up to it. And it's like this thing where it's like, you know, I feel like he actually inspires them more because he's like, you know, I'm going to be exactly who I am. And why wouldn't you do the same thing? You know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't you be proud about something? And he gives them this confidence. He also is the one that actually changes their look more than anyone else. He mm-hmm. goes in and
right.
shaves their beard or gives them a cool haircut and shows them how to take care of their skin. And I feel like that, more so than anything else, more so than clothes you're wearing or the way your house looks or anything else, like, if you feel good when you look at your face in the mirror, is the biggest confidence boost someone can have. So I feel like he makes an impact in a way that the others don't necessarily. Maybe Karamo does, because it's really more about self-reflection with Karamo. But yeah, I like Jonathan a lot. I just think, and his hair is so fantastic. I'm obsessed with his hair. I want my hair to look like that all the time. Constant references to Beyonce. Also me, you know, I'm with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing about Jonathan, you're right, that as you say that, there's something about the way that I think they all do, but he does the most, is this idea of, we're not just going to be like, you know, sort of, you know, implicitly gay, but like really focused on just, you know, this makeover aspect. But this idea of, like, we're in some ways going to be fairly in your face about it. And the thing, like, that is going to, like, in some ways make us like these, you know, the characters being made over more, is just the fact that, like, if they're willing to go along with it and they're willing to be like, hey, like, that's who you are, and in some cases that I'll even, like, play in the same way, then that's oftentimes the initial thing that makes me go, oh, this guy's okay. I'm willing to watch this episode to, like, see, you know, him get better.
Well, and even when he, like, corrects people, right? So there was an episode, the first episode with Tom asks one of the Fab Five if they're married, And I think it's
says, are you the husband or the wife?
Yeah. He says, are you the guy or the girl? Are you the man or the woman?
Or who
and
wears
Jonathan
the pants
is instant. Jonathan's instantly like, well, there's a number of things wrong with what you just said, and let's just go from the top, you know, like with a smile on his face. And that's the kind of doesn't change who he is. He doesn't get upset. He just kind of explains it how it is, and makes this course correction for this old guy who really doesn't know. You know, he just doesn't know. It's not like he's trying to be rude or anything. But I just love that he's still in, quote, Jonathan character, even having that kind of conversation. And I just really appreciate that.
Well, I don't know if it's a character, right? I mean, that's
thing. I don't.
Like,
I just
those
mean,
guys
like,
are. Yeah.
He's still in that mode. You know, it's not like he changes and gets a little surly or like gets more serious. He's never serious.
Right.
He's always bubbly. He's always light, even when he's talking about something that could be potentially serious.
Right. And I mean, that's what's interesting is that these it doesn't seem performative. Like none of the guys seem like they're putting on a persona necessarily. It just seems like this is who they are. And it's kind of amazing to me that they found people who can either put on the airs of being that genuine or be that genuine with folks.
Also, guys who can in the same breath. Like really care for the people that they're helping, and then also kind of poke fun at them. Because audience, if you have not seen Queer Eye yet, one, just do it. Like, why are you even listening to this? And two, the way that the show works is first the Fab Five drive up in this amazing like F-350 truck, right? Which is the best. And then they meet the guy and they go through the whole life and figure out what the house looks like and the clothes look like. And then they do the transformation. And at the end, the transformed, you know, main person has to go and like kind of achieve some task, whether it's take your wife out to, you know, make your wife dinner and take her out to a nice date, or, you know, ask a girl out on a date and go out on a date, or come out to your stepmother, whatever it might be. And the Fab Five sit in a room and watch on screen how it goes and kind of comment and see them prepare and
but
get ready
and
get
dressed.
They're
not there for the actual like test.
Yeah, but they're not there, so they can't tell them, like, no, change that shirt. They're just, like, watching and hoping that what they told them kind of sticks and that they learned. And so they'll kind of be like, oh, my God, like, with the gay guy, they were like, oh, man, you know he's a new gay because he is taking forever to get dressed. You know what I mean? Like, and they can do that while still, like, loving on these guys, too. And that's a hard line to walk, to kind of make fun alongside the audience and also love alongside the audience is a difficult one, and they really do a good job of that.
So to answer John's earlier question, so I've only seen the first three episodes, but I would say that you can't fix ugly. I think there's like a reason they made that the first episode, and it's just that Tom, the person who they're making over, is just such like a lovable guy, but like who also there's just so much work to do. And so I think it's just such a great demonstration of the concept. And like that was the episode that like at the end of the episode everyone's crying and I'm like watching it and crying, and it was amazing, and I was like totally in love with it.
Well, and it's become a whole thing, that episode, like Tom and Abby. So the general premise of this episode is there's this guy in like nowhere Georgia who has been divorced from his ex-wife, and he wants her back, and he's like, you know, he's got like a one-room apartment, he's got this big old like dirty beard, and he wears jorts, and you know, he drinks, he says his favorite thing in the world to do is to sit on his patio with the door open,
smoking a cigarette, watching TV.
A redneck margarita and watch TV through the door. And I was like, dude, Tom, I'm feeling you, bro. But like, you know, he needed so much work, and he went out on this date at the end with his ex-wife, and you know, you could Google BuzzFeed Tom and Abby, and there are like 14 articles about like, are they still together? Are they happy? Like, people were captivated by this turnaround that this guy made. And I think a lot of the episodes have that same feel. There are a couple that are a little, meh, you know, like give or take, but most of them are still like compelling entertainment wise because they're just, these guys are so fun. The Fab Five are so fun.
Right. I think that's true. I think the thing is about the first one is that Tom is just not only does he transform, but he's just so emotionally present and vulnerable even from the beginning.
Yeah.
And that from the very first, he's just like, I'm a really ugly guy with like a lot of, you know, I've gone through like 3 divorces and I like don't feel, you know, feel really bad about myself. And so like he's just immediately there for everything they say. Whereas I think with some of the other characters, they have to work at it a little bit more to make that kind of connection. And in that way, it's compelling in a different way. But, you know, the first episode was just grabs you from the beginning.
Well, and I think another thing about the first episode that's so good and so good for the show overall is that, I don't know about you guys, but the second that they introduced Tom, I got nervous. I felt the same way when the cop pulled over the car, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I got nervous because I was like, how is this guy going to treat them? You know, like, is he going to? And that's me. That's on me because I prejudged Tom. And when you see him over the course of the show, you see that he is open to all of this. He might not understand it. He might be a little ignorant on all of the cultural stuff. But at the end of the day, he wanted help and he trusted these guys and he opened himself up to really trust them and listen to them and care for them. And that had such an emotional payoff at the end. And I felt like, okay, I've learned something about how to prejudge people. Just like I thought Tom was going to prejudge these guys, it was actually me who was in the wrong. Do you know what I mean? And that, I think, is a really important lesson that the show can kind of impart on a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, that's totally what I was trying to get at earlier, too. Yeah, it's just like that it's like this cultural exchange sort of feels too glib, but like there's something that like the communication and the learning is happening both ways.
Yeah, exactly, which is a really special thing, I think. John, what was your favorite episode? Did you see them all?
I didn't see all of them, but I got through most of them. I thought the episode where the guy came out to his stepmother was really powerful. That was super moving. And it was a great episode. The Tom episode was really good. I liked the episode with the Degadon. I like that one as well. That one was really good. But I think the narrative arc sort of doesn't change on all of these shows, but every episode pulls back that onion a little bit on who the Fab Five are and explores different aspects of the relationship that they have with the people that they're making over, right? Should we talk at all about the app that the Atlanta app developer was building?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh,
was it the restaurant?
It's something to do with like restaurants, right?
Yeah, it was like get your restaurant equipment fixed or whatever. And he was like essentially an Atlanta Silicon Valley guy.
Yeah. I think it was like an IoT thing for, wow, I'm really tech crunching out on this. I think it was like an IoT monitoring thing for restaurant equipment. So when it breaks down, you can get notify someone to come in and repair it. So there's less downtime on the equipment.
That's the reason I watched too, is to learn about that guy's app. It's crazy you brought it up.
I feel like it's worth talking about since we're a tech, you know, blog and stuff.
Well, Atlanta is a pretty big tech hub, you know. I think people gloss over that sometimes, but yeah, they're building stuff down there.
They're definitely building stuff.
Yes, he should definitely come pitch at a TechCrunch event. No question.
Anyone should.
He probably was at a TechCrunch event.
It's possible. Those bars in Georgia where we would do those meetups were pretty massive. It was hard to meet everybody. Yeah. But I thought that they were all really good. They were all really good. The first one was definitely, I mean, as y'all both said, that guy is just pretty endearing and charming. Even if he doesn't know things, he's pretty open about what he is unaware of and willing to learn. And I thought that was sort of interesting as well, just the openness of all of the folks who are involved to accept this sort of massive intrusion into their lives in some ways, where these five guys are going to come in and totally redo things. Although you do get sweet, sweet renovated apartments out of it.
Oh
man.
Yeah, which is, oh my gosh. Like those, the gay guy's apartment was like one of the coolest. I mean, what's interesting is like for the most part, they all have pretty cool spaces to begin with. And you can tell the Fab Five walk in and they're just like, oh my God, I can do wonders with this. You know what I mean? Like, a couple of them, not so much. Tom's apartment was I had no idea what they were going to do with that thing. But
that was the one
job.
That felt genuinely, like, miraculous.
Yeah, truly. You're like, what? Like, how did they even fit all this stuff in here? Yeah, I think it's so good.
Yeah, what was the best renovation? Which apartment did y'all, as New Yorkers, have most envy over?
The gay guy's apartment.
Yeah.
Because he has this big, like, brick wall, like, exposed brick walls, big, like, loft with big open windows, and he put a bed in the living room because he wanted to wake up with natural light, I guess.
Yeah.
And his bedroom was just, like, a big closet, like, clothes stuffed on the bed and everything. And they just went in and, like, oh, my God, that place looks so good. You know, they got, like, a really nice couch. They redid his whole bedroom and, like, cleaned up his closet. And I love Tan. Like, I love him. He is so good about, like, my mom and I have this conversation sometimes because I'm pretty picky about what I wear. I'm not, like, I wouldn't consider myself androgynous, but, like, I don't like certain clothes that are considered more, like, girly that just don't fit my body well, and I don't feel confident in them, and I don't feel like they look good on me. And my little sister is in fashion PR, and she, like, you know, loves clothes. And Jackson is always trying to shop for me. And, you know, I, God bless her, because she is great at it, and she has an amazing style sense, way more than I do. But, like, she just doesn't get that, like, my body will not fit into the clothes that she thinks would look cool on me, you know? And,
yeah.
And I feel like Tan is really good about that. He's like, this will look good on you, but if it's out of your comfort zone, we're not buying it, because I don't want you to, you know, you want to love everything you put on. And I just think he's so good at it and so cute and sweet about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's it's the most noticeable there, but I think one of the other things I really like about the show is this feeling of, we want to do things that you'll actually keep doing. And it's not just like, hey, we're going to throw a bunch of stuff and we're going to tell you how it is. But like, hey, like here, let's work with what you have and take, you know, some very big steps, but usually, like, it's targeted to the person to say, this is what, here are, like, the three, you know, fashion things, here are the three grooming things that you should be doing going forward to be, like, a better version of yourself, rather than just sort of, like, imposing it on them. It's more like, this is stuff that we actually want you to do moving forward.
It's manageable. It's
manageable.
Here's an hour face regimen for every time you get out of the shower. It's like, here's your routine. Like, it's really simple. Like, you get out, put suntan lotion on, put moisturizer on, call it a day. Like, you're good. But those are things that these guys have never done before. So, like, that might feel like incorporating a lot, but in reality, it's, like, totally manageable, as opposed to, like, you need to spend an hour in the bathroom going over this, this, and this, you know? Like, it's really good.
Any final thoughts? I feel like this is a good place to wrap up. I don't want to take over Anthony's role here, but I'm wondering if...
No.
It's
good to have, like, group, you know, traffic control. no, my only final thought is, like, I will genuinely say this show makes me want to, like, you know, make my own life better. And, like, it definitely, like, has, like, given me this, like, little, like, self-improvement kick. I love it.
Yeah. And I think it's a good, I think honestly for anyone, you know, we talked last week about Roseanne and how, like, you know, the conversations between family members and friends when you have different views on things can be difficult, but also be valuable. And I think this show is just kind of like another building block of that. Like, you know, hopefully people watch it from all different perspectives and all different views on life, and feel like they can maybe understand the other side a little bit better. And I think more stuff like that, the better off we'll be.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with actually both of y'all, unsurprisingly. I think the show is really great, and everyone should go see it or download it watch it on Netflix. But the emphasis on the ways in which a little bit of self-care can go a long way toward improving, you know, your life is actually a pretty meaningful sort of message to take away. And the ways in which they're broaching conversations that are happening on a national level is also, I think, really worthwhile and makes the show worth watching. Yeah, those are my two cents.
Cool.
Cool. Well, let's wrap her up then. I will just remind listeners that if you enjoy the show, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. You can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and we will be back next week with another review. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure having you, John. Make sure you guys let us know what you think of John. We'll be rating him later.
Okay. All right. Y'all have a good one.
Guys.
Bye.